Side Hustle Show 242, Amazon FBA Europe, the next e-commerce frontier. What's up? Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, because profit isn't a dirty word. Hat tip to Rich Ogg for that one. If you've got a why side hustle statement you'd like to hear in an upcoming episode, you can send those over by email to nick@sidehustlenation.com. So what are we doing today? We're learning about the e-commerce landscape in Europe, specifically tapping into the Amazon FBA program over there, Fulfillment by Amazon, and how you can do that really from anywhere in the world. If you're already selling on Amazon, this is worth paying attention to expand your market reach. And if you're not already selling on Amazon, I think this conversation with John Cavendish from FBAFrontiers.com will get you excited about what he's calling the next e-commerce frontier. He started his FBA business 3 years ago as a side hustle, and it's since become a full-time operation when he's selling dozens or hundreds of products every day. It's weird to think of Europe as an emerging market, but John says it's about 5 years behind North America in terms of e-commerce acceptance and prevalence. There's also 700 million customers, roughly, or potential customers, roughly twice the size of the United States and Canada. And at least right now, there's a lot less competition. So in this episode, you're going to learn how to get started selling physical products in Europe without ever stepping on a flight, John's product research process, and how to get past some of the unique hurdles of doing business in Europe. Notes and links for this one are at sidehustlenation.com/FBA Europe. And at that URL, you'll also be able to download the free PDF highlight reel summary of our conversation. Before we dive in, let me take a moment to thank today's sponsor, ZipRecruiter.com. Every entrepreneur eventually reaches the ceiling of what they can accomplish on their own before they need to hire some help. And when that time comes, or maybe you're already there, I want you to think of ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter's powerful technology lets you post your job to over 100 job sites in just one click. After all, it makes sense to cast as wide a net as you can to find the most qualified candidates. And the best part is Side Hustle Show listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/side to get started today. I'd also like to thank SendPro from Pitney Bowes for sponsoring this episode. With SendPro, you'll save a ton of money on stamps and shipping because of Pitney Bowes' special negotiated rates, and you can quickly and easily compare prices between USPS and other major carriers. Visit pb.com/sidehustle to learn more and try it free for 90 days. After that, you'll get SendPro for just $5 a month. That's a third of the cost of stamps.com, and that special $5 rate is good for the lifetime of your SendPro subscription, but only when you sign up at pb.com. That's pb like peanut butter.com/sidehustle. Now, you'll notice John's English accent right away. So we started off by addressing the location question. Ready? Let's do it.
You can run it from wherever you want. You can run it from Australia if you want to. I'm in the UK maybe 2 weeks a year, and I spend most of my time in Europe or Southeast Asia or wherever I want to be. So you definitely don't need to visit. Everything is done remotely, and you don't even need to have a European business. You can have a American business or a Hong Kong business or whatever you want.
Oh, okay. So I can run things through my existing LLC and just have stuff shipped to Amazon's European distribution centers?
Yeah. You just have to register your American LLC with the UK government. They'll give you a VAT and an EORI number, and then that's it. That's all you need to import stuff into the UK and sell in all of Europe if you're only holding inventory in the UK.
What was the second thing?
Basically, if you want to hold your inventory, so hold your products in the UK, you need to be registered for this sales tax, which is VAT.
Sure.
If you're registered for sales tax in the UK, you can sell to all of Europe as long as your inventory is held in the UK.
Until Brexit is official in 2 years, right?
Yeah. I mean, it depends on what comes out of Brexit, but it's 2 years away.
Who knows?
That's... You can make $1 million in 2 years. And it'll be a good problem to have when you're making $1 million a year and you have to figure out how to get around it.
All right. Let's dive into some of the stuff. We can work on the regulatory requirements down the road. Let's say, okay, so I'm an aspiring Amazon seller. In my personal case, I've dabbled in kind of the retail arbitrage, clearance arbitrage stuff, but haven't gone down the private label path. So let's say I'm just starting out. Like, where do I go? How do I find? Do you do product research, or do you start with the arbitrage stuff? What's your first move?
That's interesting. I didn't know you'd done arbitrage. So all the problems that you were probably having with arbitrage will be so much easier, I'd say, with private label. Like, you know, finding stuff which you can actually sell, because I know Amazon's gating up a lot of categories at the moment. Or competing for the buy box, you don't have to do that if you're a private label seller. So it's really a lot easier once you've found your product, obviously.
Okay.
So say you're an American seller and you want to sell in Europe. If you're already selling in the States, you know, selling a few things, the best place to start is what you've already got. If you know you've got a quality product that you're already private labeling. But if you wanted to start completely from scratch, then you just start off the same way basically you would start off in the USA 5 years ago. I would still go for a mainstream product that sells well on European markets.
What's going to qualify as mainstream? Let's walk through this research process.
With Europe, I'd look at Europe rather than like as individual countries. Think of it as like states in America. Because if your product's doing, say, well in the UK, you want it to be doing okay in the other markets, or maybe it's doing well in Germany or well in France, and then you'll have this product that's doing very well overall. So when you start your research, start off in the UK or Germany, look at the top 100 selling products or 500 selling products, and then, yeah, start what that this is sort of what you would do in the USA 5 years ago. Look for something that's doing medium volume. So say you're looking for barbecue tools, and you find that's a good seller. It's obviously a good seller at this time of year, but not necessarily the whole year. You might see in the UK, the top ranking sellers got 70 reviews, and you click on their listing, they've got a BSR of maybe 300, which means that they're selling an insanely high quantity.
Okay, so the BSR, so that's the best seller rank. And so 300 would indicate this is the 300th best selling product in that category, whereas number one is like the best selling product in that category.
Yeah. So you're looking at the barbecue tools. You look at the first few listings and you look at the bestseller rank for each one. And if there's a nice increasing number as you go down the list, then barbecue tools is a good keyword. It's a good search term that's selling a lot of volume through each one of these listings.
Is there a minimum BSR that you're looking for or minimum sales price that you're looking for at this point?
I would always be looking for your first item to be definitely over £15, which is about $20. And you're looking for your top three products when you search to be under 2,000 BSR. So in the States, everyone will tell you 2,000 BSR is an insanely high number. But in the UK and Germany, 2,000 BSR is about what you're looking for your three products to be under to be moving good volume, somewhere between 20 and 50 units a day.
Oh, wow, a day, geez. Okay.
A day, yeah. So you're aiming for something that's, you know, you'd be able to do a minimum of 20 units a day. Because 20 units a day is, you know, 600 units a month, which makes it a worthwhile product, but not too difficult to manage inventory. Once you start hitting these products, which are doing, you know, 300 units a day, then it becomes a nightmare, well, for me personally, trying to manage your inventory, because you're going to have 20,000 in stock and it just becomes a headache and a half. But, you know, a good headache to have if you're making tens of thousands of dollars a month from one product.
Sure, sure. Okay. Do you know if the BSR is specific to that country store? So would it be different from Amazon UK, Amazon Germany?
Yeah, exactly. So in terms of searching, they actually act like completely separate marketplaces. Although we'll talk about it later, when you control them, you control them all from one seller central account, just like you would in the States. So each marketplace has a completely separate BSR, and you're looking for the top three being under 2,000 in the UK, 2,000 in Germany, and then under 1,000 in France, Spain, and Italy. So they're the five European marketplaces, UK, Germany, France, Spain, Italy.
And one seller central account is good for all of these, or do you have to set up individual logins for all of them?
So it's one seller central account, and then you have a little drop-down menu at the top where you can change between these marketplaces. It's all in English in the back end.
That's helpful.
And then the listings you have will be in different languages, but you just set them up with a translator, and then they're just sitting there, so it doesn't really matter what language it's in.
Okay. So I'm on the Landmann stainless steel barbecue tool set. It's a three-piece set, although there are three things in the picture. One of them is like tongs, so I was confused, thought that was two separate things. Okay, but the price is only £10. So this one automatically is going to get disqualified because it's not expensive enough.
It's not expensive enough, but you probably include it in your research just because the two under it, once you've done, I'm looking at the same thing as you now, are £30 and £23. You can include it in your research document, but obviously you won't be selling that type of set. You'll be selling one of the more expensive looking sets below.
Okay, I see what you mean. Let's look at this 30-pound one, because this one is prime eligible. It's a 14-piece stainless steel set.
Yeah, so it's a 14-piece stainless steel set. It comes in a nice little box if you want to look cool with your barbecue tools.
Yeah, that's very nice. Yeah, you could take this on the road, you know, if you're grilling out.
Yeah.
This one has a seller's rank of 1491 at press time in garden and outdoors. So that meets the criteria of being under 2,000, and it's got a price point of £30.
Yeah, so that's a perfectly good product to add to your spreadsheet. You'd add this one to your spreadsheet, you'd add the one above with a too low price, you'd add the couple that's showing up below it. So you've got a nice sort of five listings in your sheet with numbers of reviews, whether it's Prime eligible, which means it's FBA, so it's in the Amazon warehouse.
Okay.
Because if it's not, if the fourth one here isn't Prime eligible, it means it's being shipped by a company outside of Amazon, a third party seller, so from their own warehouse, which is a really good thing because usually FBA listings rank above FBM listings, which is what this is, fulfilled by merchant. So easier to get ahead of them.
Okay, so you see that as an opportunity.
Yeah.
Because okay, I can ship this through Prime, through Amazon's distribute or Amazon's fulfillment stuff. So I could potentially sell more or customers like who, and I always do this too when I'm searching on Amazon, I check the little Prime eligible box.
Yeah.
And so okay, so people will do that. So that's an opportunity. Okay. So you're putting the stuff into the spreadsheet, and this is just one example, you know, to go down the barbecue tools category or keyword search, and you can do this in, you know, any number of categories to see what you're looking for here. What comes next?
All right. So next we'd evaluate this just in the UK to start with. So after our evaluation, we talked about it, the price is good. If you sell a, you know, £20 to £30 item, which a lot of these ones are when you scroll down, it doesn't fit the review number so well. So the top one has 273 reviews, second one 160, the third one 92. Ideally, to make it, you know, easily competable, you want the top three to be under 100 reviews in the UK.
Okay.
So these may be slightly high, but it's still good enough that I would take this to your next level, which is to say, do your same research again in Germany. So you want to, because we're thinking of Europe as like one big USA of Europe, different states. We'd then go to Germany, so Amazon.de. So once you're on Amazon.de, then again, we just search in English, barbecue tools.
It's okay to search in English?
Yeah, search in English to start with. So that this is the best way to get the German keywords. So if you search in English and then you see the top couple of listings, it says Grillbesteck. And Grillbesteck is obviously the German keyword, then you copy and paste that word and put that into the search bar.
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
Because they'll always rank in for the UK, for the English keywords, and then you can just find the German one from the listing and copy and paste it in. So once you do a Grillbesteck search, then you can see the German listings. These are actually different brands. They've got some of the same, some different. But the top one here, which is €17.99 by Brösler, it's actually bestseller ranked 246. So in Germany, they're really selling well and they have far less reviews. So this is an excellent product to be selling in Germany at this time. But only at this time.
It's got the orange like bestseller tag on it. Okay.
Yeah, it's all exciting. This would be a really exciting product if you were searching in June, July, but probably not if you were searching in December because no one's barbecuing in Europe in December.
Sure, sure. So this is kind of a seasonal thing. So it's doing really well now, but by the time fall rolls around, or by the time you get this thing actually manufactured, it's game over. Wait till next spring.
Wait till next spring, yeah. So, I mean, to be honest, I tend to stay away from these type of seasonal products, but this is a great example of what's selling well and what's possible right now. So yeah, then this is really good in Germany. You take all the data down. I'd already be excited about this one in Germany, just going through it now. And then you do the same thing in France, Italy, and Spain. So basically, as we went through, you do your UK research or your UK and your German research. You pick the ones which you think is worth going forward, and then you do all the rest of the European markets.
Okay.
Just by going to amazon.fr, .it, and .es.
And what are you looking for on those other stores? Similar metrics? Or
the same metrics,
If something is like crazy out of line, you know, high or low, what does that mean?
It doesn't really matter. So high is always good. Low, if something is low, then it doesn't matter if it's just one of the marketplaces, because that'll only be 1/5 of your possible sales. And it could be there's just not something in that marketplace that that serves that customer yet. But the idea is you're looking for something that does really well in maybe two of the marketplaces, and then is just okay and the rest is fine. But that does do some sales. You don't want something that's completely dead in the other marketplaces, like if you're selling German flags or something like that. Probably not going to do as well in France as they would in Germany. That's basically what you do. Start to finish, that's a basic product research. You can also do other things that we cover in the course, which is, say, using USA products or using your own products and evaluating ones you already do. But they're basically the same criteria that you would use there, just searching from using your own products.
Okay. Do you do this all manually or do you use Jungle Scout or what does that look like?
You can do it, to be honest, all manually. I do use Jungle Scout. It's a great way of not having to go into every listing to look at the BSR and count the reviews. I wouldn't get too attached to the revenue numbers Jungle Scout shows for Europe because I don't think they're always bang on.
Okay.
But it's a great tool to use to just lift all the data rapidly and make your research a lot faster.
Okay.
Just the web plugin.
Very, very good. Well, Greg has got a special deal on the software for us at junglescout.com/SHN. Okay, so now we've got our spreadsheet going and we say, okay, these look good in terms of, you know, their throughput, you know, how many units they're selling a day based, estimated based on their bestseller rank. Their reviews are low enough where I think I can compete. And the price is kind of in that sweet spot of the, you know, 15 to 40 pounds to start with or something like that. Because otherwise you get really, really expensive and you're looking at a huge capital outlay on your first order. Then what do you do?
Look for a supplier. So, well, we carry on doing this until we've got a list of maybe 10 or 20 products, which are good opportunities.
Okay.
And then you can start looking for a supplier. So you can use a sourcing agent or you can go to Alibaba. I mean, there's a million different guides to this online, basically reaching out to suppliers, asking them for a lot of information. There's plenty of very good checklists that you can find on the internet, then getting samples.
John, are you going down the path of saying, hey, this is a product that I found is selling well. I would like to create the exact same thing with my own brand? Or are you trying to tweak it a little bit to make it unique or better or different? Or you're just saying, hey, there's room enough to just where I'm going to carve out some sales from this other guy?
You're definitely trying to make something better. So sometimes it can be as simple as finding a better product if there is one that isn't on the market yet. So in Europe, there are quite a lot of gaps that products that may have been introduced in the States just that haven't been introduced yet in Europe.
Okay.
So for those ones, you might be able to just find one, but it's always best to try and tweak it a bit, add something that's like extra value so that you've got a slightly better product than the competition.
Okay. Is there an easy way to do that? Or would you just open up two tabs side by side and say, look, here's the bestsellers in Amazon.com. Here's the bestsellers in Amazon.co.uk and just look for ones that aren't available there yet?
Yeah, no, you can do that definitely. But that's only once you've found that's a good product. So once you've found one, you know, once you've decided with your spreadsheet that that's an opportunity in Europe, then you can go to the States and just type in the English keyword and see what comes up. I do that quite a lot, and it's a great way to figure out what people are selling.
Okay. No, but I mean, to see what may already be selling well over here, like, hey, there's a proven demand or this is a popular product that just isn't available yet in Europe.
That is doable. That just takes a lot more time. But yeah, that's definitely doable. But as you were saying, for differentiation is also a good way of doing it. So once you're looking for ways of tweaking your product, there's a good chance that someone in the States already tweaked that product in some way. So you can just go into Amazon.com, search for barbecue tools, and maybe there's one that includes a wire brush or something like that, something to clean the barbecue with. With that, that'd be a good addition, and no one else is doing that in the listings we just looked at.
Okay, I see what you mean. Just, you know, using that as inspiration for the product tweaks and improvements.
Yeah, definitely.
What was your initial order size? Like when you were starting this out, what were you comfortable plunking down in terms of, you know, your first bulk order?
I put about $5,000 down for my first order, including shipment to the UK.
Okay.
When I started out 3 years ago.
Yeah, not outrageous for getting into this e-commerce game, but not a small chunk of change either.
No, I mean, I'd done a course at the time, and I think that's what gave me the confidence to like know what good criteria were and be confident it would sell. I just didn't want to be stuck with the inventory, but it was also, you go too small, you're never going to make an impact.
Did you find that this stuff sold right away, or were you sitting on that for a little while? Or were you like plowing everything back into more products? What happened after that?
That was actually pretty amazing. So because the UK was just so much less competitive and still is so much less competitive, I think in the first 2 weeks, I was on the bottom of page one. And all I'd done is go out into the street and collect some email addresses of people that want free products. Sent out an email to like 20 people. I think I sold 10 of them and I was like encroaching on the bottom of page one. But to be honest, in the UK, that was like 5 to 8 sales a day. So nothing spectacular.
I don't know, man. I'd be 5 to 8 sales a day just starting out.
Yeah, oh, it's good. It's good at the time. And I was like, wow, this could really make some money. So I went back to my initial supplier, got the whole catalog and then did the product research based on my supplier's catalog, which is a great way of rapidly expanding your product selection once you found a good supplier you like to work with.
Oh, okay. Hey, what else can you build? What else can you build that I think I could sell?
Well, what else do you sell? Because all these guys have got massive catalogs of products they make.
Yeah.
So you just need to find out what else they sell, do all your product research in reverse from what they already sell. And that's a great way of just building a relationship with them, showing them you're serious, and then also finding great quality products.
And did you find those guys through Alibaba or a different source?
I usually find them through Google. just searching for product, white label, product private label, product wholesaler.
Oh, okay.
So Alibaba is a great resource as well. You tend to end up finding a lot of different traders on there as well as factories, because they're the ones that speak the best English.
Oh, okay.
But it's still a good way, best way to find a Chinese supplier.
One thing we didn't touch on, we touched on the price point of a minimum of £15. Is there a minimum profitability, profit margin that you're looking for in that? Well, if it comes out, well, it's going to take £14 to get this thing landed in the UK. That's not going to work.
No, definitely not. When you do profitability in the UK, it's similar to the US, but you also need to make sure you include sales tax. Sales tax for the UK is 20%, and that's flat on the on the top sales price. So if it's a £20 product, it's 20% of £20, so it's £4. So it's not insignificant.
Like it's already baked into the price?
Yeah, you have to make sure it's baked into the price. We actually have a calculator for that on our website, fbafrontiers.com/calculator. And there you can just put in your product cost in US dollars, your shipping cost to the UK, your final sale price, and then it'll work out how much sales tax you owe, what profit you'll make, and what percentage profit that is. And you're basically aiming for 30% profit minimum after sales tax, after everything. So it's up to you to actually declare and pay your sales tax to the UK government. So for that, you just use an agent in the UK. So we have some agent recommendations on our website at fbafrontiers.com.
Yeah, so there's a little bit more of a, call it a regulatory or a red tape burden, because you got to do this VAT. And is that the same as sales tax?
Yeah, VAT is sales tax. It's value added tax, I think.
Okay, so Amazon is collecting this on your behalf, or it's baked into the price, but you just have to kind of set that aside, knowing, hey, that's not my money. I'm gonna have to pay that to the government.
Yeah, so Amazon just wash their hands of it and just say, you're collecting it, you pay it. It's up to you to make sure you pay it, because they don't want any trouble, because the UK government's trying to go after them for all their unpaid sales tax at the moment, because they're sure, trying to avoid it.
Okay. So billions, it's a seller responsibility.
Yeah.
And then you hire just somebody to take care of that for you and say, hey, this is what I sold. So they have access to your books and say, this is how much you owe.
Yeah. So the registration, if you've got a US business, starts at about £250. And there's a link on our site, and that's it. You just get them to do it for you, and then you're registered. So you're ready to sell in the UK.
250 one-time fee, or like quarterly, annually?
So it's a one-time fee of 250 to register, and then there's a quarterly fee of £110 to file once you're making sales. So it's a small fee per year, but once you start making sales, it just kind of gets rolled up into everything else. And it's great, because having a barrier to entry means that you don't get all of these sellers that you get in the States who are trying to, you know, compete for rank by dropping their price super low to below break even, and then just sort of destroying the marketplace for everybody else, because you've paid this little amount, you know, you've paid this money to register. There's less people just in there for one time and then blowing out of business 3 months later.
Okay. That makes sense. A little bit of a barrier to get people in the door.
Barriers are always good.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, good and bad. Cause it's like, well, shoot, now I gotta be serious about it. Right. If I'm going to put down this money to register, or at least register my existing company over there. And then if you were just a sole proprietor, could you do that? Or do you have to register a US like LLC first and then sign that up? Or could you say, hey, just I'm Nick Loper, sole proprietor selling in Europe?
Well, if you had an English accent and you were English Nick Loper, yes, you could. But as an American, you'll need an LLC.
Okay, fair enough.
Nick Loper's English cousin.
I'm an accent chameleon, man. If you get me over, I'll probably be slipping into it by the time of this conversation is over.
So yeah, and then just then you just need to roll your investment forward, like you were saying before. So for the first year, I rolled my investment forward. Watched one product, rolled out another four with my supplier, waited a few months, I had somebody to help me out, and then I just rolled out another 10 products and like very rapidly grew my monthly revenue month on month like that.
So you're taking the profits that you're earning and just plowing it back into more inventory.
More inventory, new products, PPC, advertising, yeah, everything.
Okay.
Just pushing.
Have you run into any issues or something you wish you knew when you were starting out, with either in terms of red tape and dealing with all these different countries, or in terms of dealing with manufacturers? I'm curious to hear, you know, what, if anything, has been a painful mistake for you.
So many lessons learned. I mean, I think my most painful mistake was starting out, you know, this was a side hustle when I started out, and wanting to spend as little money as possible and not doing the proper legal checks on my initial company name. with this proper trademark checks and what people could object to when I tried to register trademarks. And that was my most expensive, painful mistake, changing the company name way into selling. And luckily that went through fine, but that was a painful mistake.
So having to redo like all the packaging and branding and stuff?
Yeah. I'm just changing it very slightly, but changing it so that people couldn't object.
Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't actually infringing anyone's trademark, but it was just a small amount of something that they could object to, and they did. And it was just a painful thing. I definitely now get a trademark attorney to definitely check after my first product. Once it was making some money, use that money to get the trademark checked or even checked before I start at all. Now I get everything checked before I start, and it's definitely worth doing.
Okay, fair enough. Is there a centralized database? Like, we can go on the US Patent Trademark Office and search if there's any trademarks. Is there something similar for Europe?
Yeah, so I definitely check the US one and then check the UK one. Just search for UK trademark check, and it comes up with a gov.uk website, and you can just type in your terms, click search, and it'll tell you.
Okay. Does your inventory all live in the UK warehouses, or have you got it all? I mean, this is also new to me. Do you have it all over the continent too?
I've got some things just in the UK and some things all over the continent. So if you're registered for sales tax in the UK, you can just keep inventory in the UK. And then if you want to keep inventory in other countries, you have to register for sales tax there. Once you're selling in the UK and exporting, once you've sold a certain amount to each one of these other markets and Amazon shipped it there for you, then you're going to have to register for VAT there once you've passed a certain threshold. But this threshold is like 100,000 euros a year in Germany and 35,000 euros a year in every other country.
Okay.
So once you've done that, then you have to register for sales tax there, and then you can keep inventory there.
Okay, interesting. So for just starting out, you can still sell on Amazon Italy, Amazon France from the UK warehouse.
Yeah, and Amazon charge you about £1 extra fulfillment per unit.
That's it?
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, I can ship something from UK to Italy and it costs me like €3 or something like that.
Wow. That's okay. That's super cool.
And then once you pass the thresholds, you register, and then you can register for the Amazon's new thing, which is called Pan-European FBA, which is where you don't pay this fee, and Amazon you still send all your inventory to the UK or wherever you want to, and then Amazon will move it around for you in the way they sort of, they predict where it's going to sell. So they'll be randomly moving your inventory all over Europe all the time, which is what I'm registered for now.
Huh. Okay. And the advantage of that is just like it's closer to customers, and so they get it faster, or you save on that euro or two shipping fee to send it to Italy?
Yeah, you save on the euro or two shipping fee, and the customer gets it faster. So it's good in both ways. I mean, it costs about, current costs for me are about 500 euros a month to do that. But we're selling maybe 6,000 euros a month outside of the UK, so it saves a load of money.
Oh, okay.
So once you're selling more than 500 a month outside of your home market, then it starts worth registering that other marketplace as well.
Okay.
But yeah, once you're doing that kind of volume, the 500 a month's, you know, just a business expense, same as everything else.
So you don't touch any of this stuff. Like, it never, did you order samples first, or did you just like, hey, whatever, I'm doing the £5,000 or $5,000 order and it's going straight to the warehouse?
I got samples. Yeah. So you get samples, you check it out. If it's coming from China, you then get the factory inspected. I'd make sure somebody checked my inventory before it even leaves China.
Okay.
We cover some of those things in our sourcing section, but there's plenty of amazing free resources online to do with sourcing. And that's like another 3-hour podcast. You could talk literally about the ins and outs of sourcing and how to make sure things get through and you don't get ripped off. You're not dealing with an intermediary and that's telling you they're the factory and all this kind of stuff.
Okay.
But yeah, so send the inventory in, started selling 5 to 10 a day in month one. I think I was doing about 20 a day by the end of month two, maybe 150 a day by the end of year one. And yeah, it's just been growing and growing since then.
Man, that's awesome.
It was all a side hustle.
At what point did you say, okay, I'm going to go full-time into this?
Well, I was working as a consultant, but like a contractor. So I was doing, you know, 3 to 6 month contracts based with companies. So once my contract came to an end about 8 months after I started selling on FBA, I just decided, yeah, I'm not going to get another contract now. I'm just going to concentrate on this and try and grow it as big as I can.
And the rest is history.
The rest is history.
Well, John, very cool. You can check him out at fbafrontiers.com. And he's actually offered as a bonus for any Side Hustle Show listeners who sign up for his full Amazon FBA Europe training course, a free half-hour consultation. So that's pretty cool. I'm not an affiliate for John's course, but you can find more info on it and that bonus offer over at fbafrontiers.com/sidehustle. fbafrontiers.com/sidehustle. And John, let's wrap this thing up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
My number one tip would definitely be to outsource as soon as you can afford it, as soon as possible. So, you know, your customer service, talking to suppliers, talking to anybody, basically anything that's not going to generate you more income, that's just keeping the business going, I would outsource as quickly as possible. And you can outsource so cheaply, like part, you know, hire somebody from the Philippines or Vietnam part-time for, you know, $300 a month with somebody with a degree. I mean, that's what I would do.
What was the first role that you hired for?
Customer service and monitoring.
Are you fielding a lot of customer service calls or emails?
To be honest, not so much. I mean, now we may be getting, even when we're doing, you know, a few hundred units a day, we only get maybe 8 to 10 customer service emails a day. But on top of that, they can also, you know, manage your suppliers, manage any random emails that are coming in. It just takes a lot of weight off your mind. Because, you know, once you're being pulled in too many directions, I feel that you're just using up mental bandwidth, aren't you? And it's great to have somebody taking care of that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, make a system and let somebody else handle it.
Work the system, yeah.
Fair enough. John, thank you so much, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Great. Thanks for having me, Nick.
This edition of The Side Hustle Show is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. And John's number one tip to begin outsourcing as soon as you can afford it was the perfect lead-in for this, because what is outsourcing but hiring somebody else to help you out? And that's where ZipRecruiter comes in. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100-plus job sites with just one click. Then their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anybody else. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. Instead, it goes out and finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. That means no more juggling emails or phone calls. Simply rate, screen, and manage all candidates in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, Side Hustle Show listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/side. That's ZipRecruiter.com/side. And one more time, to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/side. All right, my top takeaways from this call with John. Number one, go where the cash is already flowing. Obviously, a common theme on The Side Hustle Show. But John has taken this to heart and put his products in front of Amazon's large and growing audience of buyers. And he laid the groundwork for how you can do the same. Now, one thing we didn't mention was that even though there are currently only 5 Amazon country-specific stores in Europe, they ship to, I think, 22 or 23 different countries throughout Europe. So through that network, they reach a huge percentage of the population. Takeaway number two is to do your homework. Since this is a capital-intensive business, you want to make sure you've done the research to the best of your ability before making any bulk order. Use the criteria John laid out for determining market demand, use his calculator for determining profitability, and use the US Amazon store for inspiration on how you might be able to improve upon the products that are already out there. So that's takeaway number two, do your homework. But that leads into takeaway number three. It's still going to be a leap of faith, and there's still going to be risk involved. At a certain point, you just have to be comfortable with that, or in most cases, probably learn to live with that discomfort. And I think that's probably true in any business. Risk-free profits are always going to be hard to come by, and e-commerce has a lot of moving parts to it. A $5,000 first bulk order is a pretty sizable investment. But then on the flip side of that, to be able to quit your job 8 months later, I think demonstrates the risk and then the potentially outsized rewards that come with it. And I think it demonstrates the power of the Amazon marketplace right now too. So be sure to hit up sidehustlenation.com/FBA Europe to check out all the links and resources mentioned, as well as to download that PDF highlight reel summary from this conversation. If you like what you hear on The Side Hustle Show, why not hit the subscribe button in your podcast player app? That way you'll never miss an episode, and each week more side hustle goodness will automatically beam to your device. That's it for me. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, let's go out there and make something happen, and I'll catch you in the next edition of The Side Hustle Show. Hustle on.
Thanks for listening to The Side Hustle Show at www.sidehustlenation.com.